Author only and not KPFT or Pacifica. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, 89.5 in Galveston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Levinka.
Summer Iman.
And Glenn Holt.
On May 27th, the U.S. House of Representatives voted for the 2011 National Defense Authorization Act, which is the Pentagon budget. And that bill included an amendment to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. The Senate version is still waiting on a vote. However, Senator McCain has promised to sabotage the bill. Terry Preston will join us to discuss that situation. On News Wrap tonight, a new CNN poll shows that for the first time, a majority of people in the U.S. support same-gender marriage equality, and the American Bar Association's House of Delegates recommends that all legal barriers to civil marriage for gay and lesbian couples be removed. The Obama administration has 60 days to appeal a federal court ruling in Massachusetts that overturned key provisions of DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, which bans the U.S. government from recognizing legally married same-gender couples. Then we will have a panel discussion about the experiences of and the problems faced by young people today who become open about their GLBT status. Panelists will be Burton Bagby Gross and from the GLBT Community Center and from the Montrose Counseling Center, Allison Voigt and Sally Huffer. At 10 o'clock, Rainbow Pages Foundation founder Christina Martinez will discuss the work of the Rainbow Pages Foundation, and then Equality Across America is a grassroots civil rights organization with chapters all across the country. Guest Daniel Williams will be here to discuss the latest work of the local chapter. And on the feature segment from This Way Out, an interview with a gay circus clown from the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus. That is our show this evening.
Well, that's a...
Is that enough?
I think that's enough.
Was that everything?
That's everything.
You sure? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and we'll come up with something
else. And more,
else,
as they say.
And more.
And we'll ad-lib and make it fun, and we hope that you will listen and keep listening all night.
And Summer is here, and she's tweeting like crazy, and...
Yeah, don't
so are you following us on Twitter?
Yes.
Are you following us on Twitter and Facebook? You have to be part of our flock.
That's right. We are Queer Voices on Twitter.
Twitter and Facebook. Facebook.com/Queer Voices.
Our electronic family.
Mm-hmm. And how does Facebook work again? Oh, never mind.
I'm sure you'll figure that one out.
And then also on iTunes as well. If you can't listen to us at night, you can download the podcast at a la carte, so to speak.
And, of course, the archives are available on kpft.org, too. So what else is going on in the community?
Oh, well, there's a lot of things going on. Of course, every Monday night there is the group at the community center, the coming out group. That's always something that I always like to remind people of, since by the time we're on the air, it's over with. So you got to remember for next week. And, of course, the Center Senior and Friends Potluck Fellowship at Bethel Church. And then, of course, the HIV support group is on Thursday night. All of these are at 6 p.m. So, and be part of the community center.
And I heard something about the California federal courts had said yes, and then they said no, and then they said yes. Where are we at with that, with Prop 8?
You, Ed, you tell me that they're a seesaw.
Yeah, I know. So it's like, okay, yes or no.
We'll have Summer look it up on Google, and we'll bring you up to the very latest second.
And then I don't know what about Target. Are we for them, against them? I hear...
Well, I stopped going to Target.
Yeah.
Until I hear better, I just, you
I'm
know,
in a
okay,
holding pattern.
I can live without Target a few weeks till we get an answer from Target.
I'm in a holding pattern, so I'm like... Because I'm a big supporter, so it's kind of like, okay.
Well, I like to use all of those individual corporations that are supportive of GLBT community. I like to support with my dollars. And
you know, the gay dollar is very mighty. And
oh, yes, it is.
Don't cut the hand that decorates your house or cut your hair.
We won't even go. You're stereotyping our community.
I'm using a generalization to make my point that our community is strong, and if you hurt us, if you go against us, then we have repercussions.
I understand that. But and speaking of that, being a segue into our first guest here, we have with us Colonel Terrell Preston, retired, was 26 years in the U.S. Air Force and fought in Desert Storm. As a matter of fact, he's an all-around hero, as far as I'm concerned. And
I would agree.
And he happens to be gay. Yes, yes, he was. They found out.
So, Terry, we were all hot and heavy a month ago about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And, I felt like we were going to pass it. And then all of a sudden it's like, rah, rah.
What happened?
It kind of stalled out, it sounds like.
Well, first of all, thank you both so much for having me back on the show. I really enjoyed coming a few months ago and in anticipation of all the work that was going to be done on Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal in Congress. And, of course, you probably know that back in May, the U.S. House did pass the Pentagon budget, which had a repeal amendment in it for taking Don't Ask, Don't Tell out. And so we're really moving very fast, very forward on repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell. The House has done their work. The Senate is yet to do their work. In the Senate Armed Services Committee was able to pass the amendment in their National Defense Authorization Act, which repeals Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Now that goes to the entire Senate floor for a vote, and that's up to Majority Leader Reid to schedule. And we think he's going to schedule that in September.
Is he going to schedule it after McCain gets beaten?
No, I think they're going to do it before the November elections. I think that Reid really wants to bring that vote, number one, because the defense bill needs to be passed. They need to have their money for the next fiscal year. So I think that's going to happen soon.
What is the story in the Senate? I know that it's currently many of the Republicans and Tea Partiers are demagoguing the whole repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, as well as DOMA and a lot of other GLBT initiatives. And so where are they right now on that?
Well, on the Don't Ask, Don't Tell, of course, any Republican is sort of tied to the party platform. And unfortunately, in the Republican Party platform, there's one plank that says homosexuality is incompatible with military service. So any Republican that decides they want to work against that plank is not going to be in favor with the leadership in the Republican Party. So they're sort of in a bind in that regard. For instance, our two U.S. senators in Texas, Hutchison and Cornyn, are hard over about that. They really want to support that plank in the Republican platform. I've sent them numerous letters telling them that the tide of popular opinion is that the gays and lesbians should serve openly in the military services, and that it's high time we did that. Look at all of our allies overseas that allow that open service. There's never been one problem. The Brits celebrate 10 years of open service this year, and they started that in 2000. And so they've never had one problem at all.
Well, it's unfortunate that our military, isn't it a lot of the senior military that are still resistant to it? This whole thing about doing the one-year study, I don't want to go into some of the questions they had on the study, but some of the questions were, no matter, it was there was no good answer to it.
You've probably seen the over 100 questions in the survey, as it's called.
The survey of the servicemen.
It was down to 400,000 active duty troops, not any of the retirees or reservists or family members so far. But only a quarter have responded. And I think it's telling because 75% of the current serving soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marine absolutely think that gays and lesbians should serve openly in the military. So there's this sort of crusty old guard that is used to the old ways that would sort of like to keep the status quo. But the majority of the people serving really don't care. In fact, you can ask almost any troop on the street, do you know if there's gays and lesbians in your unit? And they said, of course there are. And they're very competent and they're doing their job, so leave them alone.
And Terry, why is this a bad policy for not only the military but for our community? I mean,
Well, you know, it's a bad policy all the way around because, number one, Brian, it's the only discriminatory bill, only discriminatory law that we have on the U.S. books, and so that just doesn't fly. It's, you know, basically it's, in many people's minds, is unconstitutional. You're keeping a group of very dedicated military folks from serving their country. Well, over 14,000 people have been kicked out under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and probably 3 to 4 times that have just chosen not to renew their commitment and stay in the military. So we've lost a lot of really talented folks.
And we spend a lot of money training these individuals. As taxpayers, I spend a lot of money, you know, in my tax dollars training these individuals and then have them just, well, I can't serve anymore because I'm afraid of being outed. Or as the case of that came up when a police officer turned them in one case, which was in the news here several months ago.
Probably the biggest profile case right now is Victor Fehrenbach. He's a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Air Force. He's a weapons system operator. He's a navigator in fighter jets. And, you know, right now he's being forced with a discharge from the Air Force because he had to admit that he had a gay relationship. And so here's a guy who has numerous medals. He's been in almost every war that has happened since he's been in the military for 18 years. He's 2 years away from retirement, about a year and a half away from retirement. And they're saying, we're going to kick you out. We're going to take your pension away. We're going to kick you out of the Air Force just because we found out you're gay. And so everybody in his unit has said, this is one of the best guys we've ever had. His supervisors have still continued to give him top marks on his performance reports, even though this has been going on for over a year. So, you know, this is an example of a person that probably has, you know, upwards of $15 to $20 million invested in him, and we're going to boot him out right when we're fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Who's the push to get him out? Well, in general, I mean, you got specific on this one. Is there any way of knowing who is the individual or individuals that are really wanting him out?
Well, you know,
are they making him an example?
I'll just sort of sum it up two ways. Number one, it's the law, and so you know, if anybody's in favor of upholding laws, it's the military. You know, they're by the book.
Mm-hmm.
And then number two, the other side of the coin is you've got commanders in the field who may or may not want to do this. For instance, I think I showed you some statistics last time that when conflicts erupt, the discharges go down. Why is that? Why is there a bell-shaped curve between 93 up into 2001 after 9/11 when we started going to Afghanistan? Well, it's because when commanders take their troops to Afghanistan or Iraq, and then Snuffy comes up and says, hey, First Sergeant, I got bad news for you. I'm gay. I got to go home. He says, no. You're my best rifleman. You're not going home.
The rules don't apply.
Yes. So the discharges go way down. They've dropped significantly since these wars have started lately.
I see. So, okay, say tomorrow Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed.
Right.
What would happen then? Could gays be openly serve in the military?
The way the current compromise repeal language goes, these amendments that are both in the House bill and the Senate bill, it's not quite that automatic. So if the Senate votes next month and you hear it on TV, it doesn't mean that you can come out in the military because they'll still discharge you. Here's why. There's a process that has to be take place, and the process includes letting the Pentagon digest a study that's being done this year. The study by the Pentagon Working Group, which I've met, is taking a look at not whether or not Don't Ask, Don't Tell should be repealed, but how to implement the repeal. That's their job. They have to build a plan and regulations that will be put in place once repeal happens. That's their job. I belong to a group of retired colonels and generals that actually went up to the Pentagon and met these folks 2 months ago, and we sat down with them for a couple hours. And, you know, we were the only group that went in there and said, how can we help you build your implementation plan? Every other group, the Veterans for Foreign Wars, all these other groups came in and said, don't you dare repeal, Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So we went up there and said, how can we help you? We're gay and lesbian folks, retired commanders of these units in the military. We've had gay troops. We know what's going on. We can help you write these plans. And so that implementation plan has to be finished, and that's due 1 December to Secretary Gates. Once that happens, then Secretary Gates, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Admiral Mullen, and President Obama have to certify that implementing this repeal will not have adverse effects on the morale, the readiness, the retention and recruitment of military personnel. And so once that happens, then there's going to be like maybe a 60-day period after that that is okay. So you have to really watch what's going on. If you're in the military now, if you're active duty and you're gay or lesbian and you're, of course, in the closet, you need to wait until there's an all clear before you can ever come out. Another thing that's interesting, when we met the Pentagon Working Group a couple months ago, a two-star Air Force general sat next to me. He was the chief of staff of the working group, and he and I went to the same pilot training base, Laughlin, over in Del Rio, you know, 30 years ago. And he said, Terry, what do you think is going to happen when the repeal occurs? And he knew it was going to occur. And I said, General, you're not going to see a blip on the radar screen. It's going to be like Y2K. You know, people aren't going to come out. You're not going to see pink tutus at the military ball. This is not going to happen because most of the guys anyway who are in the military are kind of like me. They're sort of conservative. They want to fly jets. They want to do these kind of things. And they're probably not going to risk their careers by waving a big flag and saying, hey, I'm different. They're going to think, okay, my boss has to rate four people. Only one person's getting the top rating. I want it to be me.
That's exactly right.
You spend your whole career kind of blending in and kind of being part of the unit.
Exactly, you do. No matter what background you come from, it's what happens.
Well, and that, in essence, is what the military is about. It's about everybody working as a cohesive unit. And one of the things you said there that it has always been one of those red herrings that's thrown out there is that, well, that it's going to undermine the readiness of the troops. And how are they going to gauge that? How do you measure the readiness? I mean, after all, until the 80s and Reagan, we weren't ready to fight each other, let alone a country overseas.
I don't think they're prepared to really gauge that. I think they're counting on this survey to help them gauge that. But the problem is, they're not going to get a really good sampling out of the survey. Only about a quarter of the people have returned it, so that's about 100,000. And out of that, how many gays and lesbians responded? I mean, that's probably the big issue, right, is how do the gays and lesbians feel about how they're going to be treated if the repeal happens?
Was it required that they return them?
No, it's not required. It's all voluntary.
Which means that the sample will be skewed anyway.
Could be. That's right.
I mean, anytime statistically you do a survey, you have to be sure that you get the right demographic or you'll skew the survey.
On top of that, consider this. As soon as the survey was put out there, the Service Members Legal Defense Network, the Human Rights Campaign, and several other organizations looked at the survey and the security behind the survey and said, you know, we can't guarantee your safety. We can't guarantee that your privacy will be protected. And so they didn't recommend people take the survey if they were gay and lesbian. So. You know,
makes sense.
There's even bigger skew than we might think.
Now, Terry, what's going on here locally to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell?
Well, interesting you ask, Brian, because about the time I came on your show last time, a few months back, I started meeting with every city council member here in Houston to explain what Don't Ask, Don't Tell is and isn't, and why it's important to send Congress a message that we should repeal this law. And I've met with nine of the 14 city council members so far. We've got a few more to go this week, as well as the city controller on Wednesday, and the response has been very receptive. Even the conservatives on the city council were very surprised about the fact that Don't Ask, Don't Tell isn't just the old Pentagon policy put into U.S. code, Title 10 code. This law actually is a pursuit mechanism. It tells existing service members, the straight community in the military services, that gays and lesbians are bad. They need to be pursued and kicked out. You know, so it makes a second-class citizen status automatically out of gays and lesbians. So most of the city council members were very surprised to hear what Don't Ask, Don't Tell is. A lot thought that it was an invitation for gays and lesbians to serve in the military. That it is not. It's really a mechanism to control the gays and lesbians in the military and make sure that they're discovered and kicked out.
Yes, it's hate legislation, I think.
Well, you know, back in 93 when it was put together, there was fear, actually. You mm-hmm. know, even the conservative Democrats like Sam Nunn were really worried that if gays and lesbians were in the military, which, by the way, they've always been.
They've always been there.
They're there today.
But if they were out in the military, it would make the straight people very uncomfortable.
Well, so, it would have made Sam Nunn uncomfortable.
Apparently.
Yeah.
But today, you know, you may have read in the paper this weekend that The four-star General McChrystal, who was just fired from his post over in the war zone, he's been a special forces guy his whole life. And there was a whole article, I think, in the New York Times that was talking about how the special forces seem to be the one group in the military that's already accepted gays. That there's gays in the special forces and they're treated very well. Why? Because they can do their jobs and they're respected very highly.
Well, it's the essence of it is it's the person next to you, the man or woman beside you or behind you, you can trust them with your life.
That's right. Yeah.
And you're not going to look at their resume.
No, you're going to look at can they do their job. You know,
yes.
And they cover your back in the war zone. And that's really what's going on right now. It's just that the leadership, the older folks, the generals, haven't caught up to where the troops are. The troops are very accepting.
And we've been talking with Colonel Terrell Preston, retired from the U.S. Air Force. And we've been talking about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Is there any way they can contact you or the organization?
Well, thanks for that, Jennifer. Right, the fact is, we're trying to put together sort of a grassroots Houston gay and lesbian veterans group, and I just started a Facebook page this weekend. It's called Houston Pride Veterans. If you go into the Facebook and you type in Houston Pride Veterans, it'll pop the page up. We're just starting, but we're starting to post things on there about the status of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Veterans Administration issues, things that might be of interest to the community of GLBT veterans of the military.
Do you have to be a veteran to join your Facebook page?
No, you sure don't.
You're just interested
no,
and want to see it repealed?
We'd love to have more people join who are interested in the cause, and that's absolutely fantastic. We'd love to see the ranks grow on that page. And even on the page, the email address, the Gmail email address is on that page, so you can find that too.
Let's give out that email.
The email is...
it's Houston. I have HoustonVetsPride@gmail.com.
Yes, HoustonVetsPride@gmail.com.
Now, besides Facebook, is there anything else our listeners can do?
Yes, there's several things any listener can do. First of all, you know, it's always helpful if you can call or write your senator or representative. If you don't know who your senator or representative is, just Google your zip code with U.S. senator or U.S. representative, and it'll pop up who the one is for your zip code. And, you know, tell them, hey, I'm your constituent. And I really want to see this thing repealed. I really want to see Don't Ask, Don't Tell go away. And also, since we're meeting with all the city council members, it would also be helpful if you could call or write your city council member as well and tell them, hey, I've heard that you're learning about Don't Ask, Don't Tell and the way the repeal is going. I'm in favor of that repeal. And as your constituent, I hope that you take that to the city council. And the reason is... after I meet all the city council members, I'm going to go to one of the Tuesday open mic sessions, perhaps the 31st of August, if I can see all the council members in time. And at that particular meeting, I'm going to recap all the things I've told them about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And I'm going to ask the city council and Mayor Parker if we can pass a Houston resolution urging Congress to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And the reason that's so important is because out of the top 10 U.S. cities in terms of size, Houston's number 4. We're the only one that hasn't sent Congress a resolution.
Really?
Urging them to repeal.
I did not know that.
Yeah,
well, good.
Fact.
I support that.
So we're really trying. That's the whole purpose of meeting the council members is to hit this crescendo of the city council meeting and say, please, let's pass a resolution to tell Congress to do the right thing. And so, you know, the more people they hear from, the more they get emboldened to vote yes. And as soon as I can get to Mayor Parker and get her to sponsor this resolution, we'll be taking that forward.
All right. We want to thank you for coming and giving us this great update on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And we've been, again, like I said a moment ago, we've been talking with Colonel Terrell Preston, retired from the U.S. Air Force. And this is Queer Voices.
Thank you.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm John Torres.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending August 14th, 2010. Mexico's Supreme Court has added to its August 5th, 8-2 ruling that upheld the federal constitutionality of Mexico City's marriage equality law. This week's 9-2 decision said that all civil marriages, including those of same-gender couples, must be recognized throughout the country, even though it did not require other jurisdictions to open marriage to lesbian and gay couples. The justices cited Article 121 of the National Charter that requires each of the country's 31 states and Mexico City, which is a federal district much like Washington, D.C. in the U.S., to give faith and credit to the legal contracts and judicial proceedings of all the others. That means that any gay or lesbian couple living in the country can travel to Mexico City and legally wed, and that the marriage must be recognized by their home state. The country's Roman Catholic Church, the federal government of President Felipe Calderón's right-of-center National Action Party, and state governments controlled by that party all strenuously opposed the capital city legislation, which passed in March. The High Court is expected to rule soon on what may be the most contentious provision of that law, adoption rights for gay and lesbian couples. The federal government continues to appeal that part of the law, as it did the entire bill. One of the High Court justices, Sergio Aguirre, argued against those rights this week, saying that children adopted by legally married same-gender couples might suffer discrimination because of who their parents are.
Costa Rica's constitutional court this week blocked the nation's electoral tribunal from including in the December municipal elections a referendum that would have asked the citizens of the Central American country to vote on same-gender civil unions. The tribunal had received petitions circulated primarily by Roman Catholic groups with some 150,000 signatures, far more than required, to qualify the issue for the ballot. Most analysts said that a large majority of voters in the heavily Catholic country were likely to oppose civil unions for same-gender couples. The High Court justices said in their 5-2 ruling that the legislature is the proper venue for this issue, and that the majority cannot be allowed to vote on the rights of a minority. Minority rights that are derived from claims against the majority, the court said in a statement, cannot be subject to a referendum process where majorities are needed. The court's decision cannot be appealed.
And in California, the legal battle over the marriage equality banning Proposition 8 continues. That case, too, raises the issue of a majority using the ballot box to strip away the rights of a minority. U.S. District Judge Vaughn Walker refused to issue a permanent stay of his August 4th decision that found Prop 8 unconstitutional under federal law. He did, however, issue a temporary stay of the ruling this week that would expire on August 16th. That gave the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals about a week to decide if it wants to prevent same-gender couples from marrying while its judges consider the appeal filed by Prop 8 backers asking that Walker's original ruling be overturned.
Meanwhile, it's not clear that Walker's original decision can be appealed. All of the defendants in the lawsuit, including Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and Attorney General Jerry Brown, have refused to defend Prop 8. Its only defenders are interveners in the lawsuit, representing the same people who put the measure on the California ballot in the first place. While Walker was willing to let them argue their case at the district court level in San Francisco, he questioned in his stay ruling their legal standing under the U.S. Constitution to appeal to the Ninth Circuit or to the U.S. Supreme Court. Walker wrote that, "The Supreme Court has expressed grave doubts whether initiative proponents have independent Article III standing to defend the constitutionality of a ballot initiative." Walker also said the defendant interveners failed to meet any of the standard requirements for extending his stay. They needed to demonstrate a strong likelihood that his original decision will be overturned on appeal and that they would be irreparably harmed without a stay. The judge said they did neither.
The next moves will come from the Ninth Circuit. Its judges could issue another short stay, or they could issue a full stay until all appeals have run their course. They could also decide that the Prop 8 defender interveners have no legal standing to appeal at all. If the Ninth Circuit refuses to extend the stay, Prop 8 backers may attempt to persuade the U.S. Supreme Court to step in. Such a request would go first to Justice Anthony Kennedy, the circuit justice for that part of the country. If the Ninth Circuit rejects a permanent stay and the appellants get no relief from the Supreme Court, lesbian and gay couples could begin marrying in California soon thereafter, and Proposition 8 would be permanently stricken from California's Constitution.
The Ninth Circuit late this week ordered the Olson Boys legal team challenging Prop 8 to file a response by 11 p.m. on August 13th to the emergency motion to stay Walker's ruling that had been submitted the day before by the measure's backers. The court gave Prop 8 supporters until 9 a.m. on August 16th to file their response. Most legal analysts were surprised by the quick action by the Ninth Circuit, but noted that each side had likely anticipated the next step in the legal battle and had already prepared their briefs. And if it turns out that the Proposition 8 backers don't have legal standing to pursue their appeal, there's still a question about another entity having such a right. The Board of Supervisors of California's Imperial County, where voters overwhelmingly supported Prop 8, has filed a separate appeal to the Ninth Circuit. They wanted to join the defender interveners in the original lawsuit after state officials declined to do so. But Judge Walker refused their request. His stay ruling this week also included language suggesting that he very much doubts that a local government in California would have standing to pursue an appeal when the state refuses to do so.
In related news this week, Republicans in the U.S. Senate are blocking the confirmation of Goodwin Liu, who's been nominated by President Obama to the Ninth Circuit. According to a report at 365gay.com, Obama's nomination was returned to the president, but he's expected to resubmit it. Liu was a Rhodes Scholar, a Supreme Court clerk, and is currently a law professor at the University of California, Berkeley. He previously served for 16 years as an attorney for the American Civil Liberties Union of California, a fact frequently cited by many of the Republicans opposing his nomination.
National support for same-gender couples has risen to a record high in the U.S., with more than 52% of Americans agreeing that gays and lesbians should have the constitutional right to civil marriage. In the CNN poll released this week, 46% opposed marriage equality. The margin of sampling error among the 496 people surveyed is plus or minus 3% for the total group, and the same for registered voters.
And the American Bar Association's House of Delegates passed a recommendation this week urging all state, territorial, and tribal governments to eliminate all of their legal barriers to civil marriage between two persons of the same sex who are otherwise eligible to marry.
At least one well-known U.S. blogger erroneously reported this week that the Obama administration had decided not to appeal a July federal court ruling in Massachusetts that overturned parts of the Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA. In fact, only the final judgment was officially filed this week, which gives the federal government 60 days to appeal it. Even though the self-titled fierce advocate for LGBT rights, President Obama, has many times called for DOMA's repeal, his Justice Department has defended DOMA in every court challenge, so it would be a bit of a shock if it doesn't appeal the Massachusetts ruling. The Bay State argues that its legally wed same-gender couples must receive all the rights and benefits of marriage under federal law. DOMA bans federal recognition of those couples.
And finally, the U.S. military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy was challenged for the first time in a federal court this week. Lieutenant Colonel Victor Fehrenbach, a highly decorated combat pilot on the verge of being fired by the Air Force because he's gay, filed a motion in federal court to stop his discharge under the Pentagon policy banning service by out gays and lesbians. The request at the U.S. Court for the District of Idaho, closest to where Fehrenbach currently serves with distinction, challenges only his discharge. But its outcome could impact the continuing legal and political battles against the discriminatory policy. If the appeals court grants Fehrenbach's request, it would maintain his service status until a more complete hearing can be held on the merits of the case. Fehrenbach, just 13 months shy of his 20-year retirement, is believed to be the highest-ranking officer currently facing discharge under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. He flew 90 combat missions in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Kosovo, with training that is estimated to have cost the American taxpayer $25 million. The Air Force Personnel Board reportedly sent its discharge recommendation to Air Force Secretary Michael Donnelly several weeks ago for a final decision. Without the emergency court order, Fehrenbach says he could be discharged at any moment. But the Air Force said in a press release late this week that several media accounts have inaccurately reported that Michael Donnelly, Secretary of the Air Force, is reviewing Colonel Fehrenbach's case. This is not accurate. The case is still undergoing review at the Air Force Review Board's agency. Meanwhile, Fehrenbach's almost 20-year military career twists in the wind.
That's News Wrap for the week ending August 14th, 2010. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. Read the text of this week's News Wrap online at www.thiswayout.org. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm John Torres.
This is Queer Voices. And we said that we would have that update for you on the situation with Prop 8 in California.
Yes, what is it?
The three-judge panel of the District Court of Appeals has put an indefinite hold on doing any more gay marriages.
Oh.
So everyone's holding their breath, I guess.
While the appeal process winds its way
to the Supreme Court.
I don't know if it'll actually get to the Supreme. I don't know if the Supreme Court will take it.
Well, first of all, the appeal, it'll go to the full court.
Right.
It'll go, yeah, not the three-member panel.
This was the on-bank group.
It'll go to the full.
Mm-hmm.
So within...
And I think that'll be the last. I mean, a lot of people are saying that it'll go to the Supreme Court, but I really expect the Supreme Court to say, to punt. And say no.
We're
this
not going to hear this.
Issue.
We'll leave it.
Right.
We'll leave it alone right there. The but there'll be a precedent from the Court of Appeals
that will only affect California.
No, well that whole district.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
In
okay.
addition to the surrounding states, in addition to that. So
it's coming. It's
and it can be used as a precedent in other states.
We will have gay marriage eventually.
Eventually.
Not in Texas.
Yes.
Hopefully.
Time is on our side.
Wait, hopefully not in Texas?
No, I said hopefully, but not here. A long time. Well, this is Brian Levinka.
Hey, this is Jennifer Nay again.
And I think one thing that most gay people have in common is coming out. Different stories. We all come out either to ourselves or we come out to our friends and to our family. And tonight we put together a small panel to discuss this very... life experience that we all share. In the studio, we have Burton Bagby Groves from the GOPT Community Center. Say hello.
Hello.
And we have guest Rex Humphreys also here to tell us about his coming out experiences and kind of what he went through. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, so coming out. How was your experience, Rex, and what did you see in the community?
Well, I wasn't, I didn't come out really until I was 32.
Okay, so later.
And so, yes, much later. I was dating women up until the point that I came out. And finally one day I was like, I think this isn't working. But at that time, being a professional at age 32, coming out, having most of my friends from church, I had nowhere really to turn with the exception of gay.com or going to the bars. And in all of those situations, I don't say all, but a lot of people are online looking to hook up.
They have an agenda, ulterior motive.
Exactly. So I was kind of like the odd guy that would actually say, so, how was your day?
Yeah.
Can we have a conversation?
Can we have a real conversation over a cup of coffee?
Exactly. And so my coming out experience, fortunately, I did meet a few good friends that kind of drug me out of the closet and helped me along the way, but... I never found any resources or safe places that weren't meat factories, so to say.
So, Barton, you are part of an organization that provides some of these services. Tell us about some of the horror stories, I guess, or what are the typical experiences these days in coming out?
Well, before you answer that question, I always announce here on the show your coming out group on Monday nights, which is before our show starts. So by the time I announce it, it's over with.
Just came from there.
I know. And so I wanted to make sure
Thank you.
You knew we were giving that announcement.
Yeah, thanks very much. It's on the first and third Monday, 7 p.m. at the Houston GLBT Community Center at 3400 Montrose. I got to put my little plug in there. But the center is the only year-round coming out group right now. There's some other agencies that they come and go, but we offer an ongoing coming out group, and it's a little different philosophy. You know, some folks think that you shouldn't overlap. I think it's really helpful to mix and mingle folks who've just come out to mom last week, you know, versus somebody who, you know, has been out for a while. And, you know, we've had folks that are very out in the community. It was one of the most fascinating things was somebody who's out totally. I mean, somebody that you all know and came to this coming out group. And I looked at him and I said, hi, you know, what are you doing here? Well, he wanted some skills on talking to his out-of-state, very religiously conservative family. And he knows I'm a minister, and I'm a gay minister, and so he thought, you know, that... And we do talk about religion and spirituality in some of the segments. But some of the horror stories, you know, a guy was telling me recently when he told his father... And it's all turned out better later, but his father turned to him about a week later, didn't say anything at the time, and turned to him a week later and said, you know, you're dead to me.
Oh, my gosh.
And, but to, fortunately, the guy allowed the conversation to continue, because that would have been a terrible thing to just walk away and be left with for however long. But he said, the person that I thought you were is dead. The person that I hoped you might be, in many ways, is dead. And now there's somebody new that I have to meet, somebody that I didn't think I knew. And so, you know, one of the things we tell people is sometimes it's good to close the mouth and do some listening, because he said, my gut reaction was to walk away from him, to say, you know, up yours, you know, I'm out of here, whatever.
The relationship.
Right. Instead, he just shut his mouth and listened. And you can tell, I told the chapter 1, 2, 3, and 4, you know, as it continued, you know, it went better. During that like 30-minute conversation that they had. But, you know, there are all kinds of stories of folks. I think that Rex's experience is very typical, what we're finding. And one of the reasons that so many of the activities at the GLBT Community Center are non-alcohol is because we have a lot of people who don't want to be in that drinking bar mode. In when they're meeting people and they're already, you know, in a stress situation. There's nothing wrong with bars and, you know, with socializing in that way, but we just find that offering people another opportunity that's not quite so high pressure, I guess. Mm-hmm. Is that a good way to describe that environment for a lot of people, the bar environment?
It's either high pressure or just so much expectations.
Well,
right?
I think we're programmed to kind of be in pursuit mode when we go to the bars, and we're taught that from a young age.
Right.
This is where you meet the quote-unquote, air quotes, love of your life, and you go to the bar, and that's gay culture.
Well, have you ever had...
I think that's all culture. It's not exclusively culture.
It's not,
you go to a bar to meet people.
But combine that with, in the gay culture, where we feel isolated and alone.
And so it's the only place we know to go, unless there are other outlets.
Exactly.
And for years, it was the only place we could go. That was our kind of our watering hole, so to speak.
And that was the only place society would let us.
Allow us to meet.
Well, I remember going originally and thinking, I'm going to meet somebody tonight. And so it's like when you leave the bar, it's like if you're going home alone, it's like, I failed.
Right. I didn't achieve my goal. And, you know, one of the things, the bars, in many respects, were our community center.
Oh, yes, they were.
And yes. Now, you know, we had a young woman come tonight who's 22 years old, just graduated from college in the Northeast, decided she wanted to live in Houston because she has some family here, school teacher, and has a job, doesn't know where yet, which just blows my mind. She starts Monday, but they're going to call her Monday morning and tell her where.
School, yeah.
You're going to report to the north side, east side, west side, you know, whatever. But she knows she has a job. But she said that the first thing she did was Google Houston coming out. And the first thing that popped up, I'm real happy with Google tonight, was the Houston GLBT Community Center's coming out group. And so she came to our coming out group. And that's, she talked about exactly what Rex talked about, that she was looking for someplace to have some support, but that she felt was going to be a little controlled in terms of not all that pressure and a dating hookup spot, and that's what everybody does.
But it's also a frame of mind, too, because it took, I guess, probably several years after coming out that I finally hit that state of mind where I was okay with me.
Right.
So,
yes.
I don't really go to the bars anymore, and I, not from a derogatory stance of me not going to the bars, it's just that I have other things going on. But when I go to a bar, I don't care if I meet somebody. I don't care if I talk to somebody. I'm just going for the ambiance of the environment. And when you can reach that point where you're satisfied with yourself, then there's not a pressure of a end result that you need by the time you leave.
Well, and we talk about this in our coming out group, that there are stages of coming out, and that's what you're talking about, going through those stages. And it's like anything. You know, it's like, you know, the stages of, you know, I'm a parent now, and the whole stages of changing my life completely, you know, turning it upside down, you know, having a child, you know, you go through all this, you're excited, and then one day you realize, wow, I can't just go out and do whatever I want to do. I've got this, this responsibility here. But people are at a very different point now, for the most part, than they were. You know, really, it's amazing. It depends how old you are. Because we have 22-year-olds that come, and it's fascinating to see the difference between the 22-year-olds, the 32-year-olds, and the 42-year-olds.
Is it getting easier to come out now because of society?
I think it's totally easier. And the younger ones talk about, oh, yeah, I told my friends and my family, and, you know, no problem. I've got a grandmother that I haven't told yet. Or,
is that, you know, do you think, because of the visibility in our media? Or, you know, like, Ellen came out and, like, you know, our mayor's gay, and they know someone, at least know somebody that's gay, either on TV or in person.
You know, Brian, you hit the nail on the head. That's totally what it's about. The National Gay and Lesbian Task Force Policy Institute did a wonderful study a few years back, and it's called From Wrongs to Rights, Trends and Attitudes Towards GLBT Americans. And it tracks over about a 35-year period the attitudes and the positive increases that we've seen in the general public's attitudes about GLBT people tracks right along with coming out. The likelihood, you know, if they know people, their attitude is better. Because it's not the abstract anymore. It's not
it's
people.
Not them.
It's Jennifer Renee, who's at the office, who, she's in the next office for me.
Right. And I know her, and she's a good person.
She's really cool. I really like her. We have a great time at lunch.
Which is exactly what Milk said. You know,
that's right.
That we make change by coming out. Mm-hmm. We don't hide by making change. We have to come out.
And he was famously quoting as saying that the gay rights movement would be over tomorrow if everyone came out.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So true. Because, you know, I can't tell you how many minister friends I talk to who are really struggling with this and really want to be in a better place. But they talk about, I have to stop myself from laughing because they'll say, well, you know, I've never met a gay person. And I'm like, you're in the fourth largest city in America, if they're from Houston. You're in the fourth largest city in America. You've met queer people. You just didn't know it. They may not have told you. And that goes back to what we all experience. We spend our lives coming out. At least once a month at the big church where I grew up, somebody walks up to me and says, oh, I saw your cute little daughter. Where's your wife?
Well,
here he is.
He is over here.
And you have to gear yourself up for this conversation. Now, I go to a progressive enough Baptist church where they're not going to be hateful or mean. They might end the conversation fairly quickly and fade away, but I don't have to worry about anybody yelling at me. But still, you gird yourself up, right? I mean, I'm sure, Rex, you deal with that,
too. Well, I mean, it's like on Facebook. Like, every time one of your colleagues wants to friend you on Facebook, it's like, oh, do I do that now?
Way of coming out.
Well, I actually had one of my colleagues post on my Facebook page about quoting scripture about homosexuality being against God. And I was like, really? So we're really dealing with the coming. But question for you. You talked about it being easier to come out. Is it easier to come out for this younger crowd? Or are you finding that guys in their 30s and 40s and women are coming out easier as well?
I think it's for everybody it's easier to come out. I think it's a little easier for the youth because they're dealing predominantly with younger folks. But we're finding that we have people in their 50s and 60s who are finally coming to terms with not totally shielding and hiding their true identity from their family. And so they come because they want to figure out, they need some tools. You know, like the guy who's totally out except to his family, he came looking for some tools. He wanted some ways to have conversation. And as a therapist and pastoral counselor, you know, I can provide some of those tools. But what's infinitely more meaningful, I think, than what I offer is what they get from that group.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the stories that they hear from other people. This is how I did it last week.
Right. Community. Well,
exactly. You're not alone, and you can relate to other people and say, if they can do it, I can do it.
Right. Exactly.
Well, yeah, and you're sharing with one another. I mean, that's the best way to learn something. You know, you could preach, if you will, no offense there, but you know, I can lecture and I can tell you the things, I can write it out and show it to you. Yes, share your wisdom. But the fact is that in gentle conversation over a cup of coffee or with a number of friends sharing their own personal experience,
so much makes more meaningful.
You'll internalize that a whole lot more.
What's building authentic relationships together?
Well, and the thing is that when we were all in the closet, we never could have a real, authentic relationship because we were always hiding something.
I remember just looking for some sort of person that I could identify with in, like, movies or something, and just there was nothing.
Right.
You know, and this, I'm dating myself with the 80s and 90s, but...
Think how I felt.
Well, but I think about...
I still can't find anybody to identify with.
I think about little black kids who now have this wonderful role model. This will bring tears to my eyes. Who now have this wonderful role model in our president.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought anything about it. I don't know that I ever really wanted to be president, you know, but I knew that it was maybe a possibility because that people that looked like me had been president. But you think about now these kids in Houston who are looking around and they look up and they see, our mayor's a lesbian. Gay people can be the mayor of the fourth largest city in America.
We can matter.
Right. Yes, we can.
Yeah. Or we're not automatically disqualified because of who we are.
Right. It's, you know, that's exactly it. And that is so meaningful, the community that comes together. And, you know, that's what the community center does, is convene people. You know, we're working with the mayor's office on convening a big forum in several months. And, you know, that's what I feel like this group does. People, you know, pat me on the back and they say, oh, Burton, you know, it's just so great, you know, this coming out group you're doing. I said, actually, I just kind of call it to order and kind of guide it along, but they do all the work.
We were talking about youth earlier. What has the experience been with the youth? I mean, do our community kind of attack them and kind of cannibalize our youth? Are they being kind of the quote-unquote new meat? Or is that a common occurrence?
One of the reasons that the community center, I think, this is one of our areas where we have a lot younger crowd than we do in some of our other programs, is because of what you're talking about. Because when young people go to bars, they do feel like they're the fresh meat on the shelf. And, you know, and they talk about it. I mean, I'm not giving you my opinion. I'm sharing, you know, what they've shared with us, which is, you know, I don't like it. I, you know, the kid that last, you know, 2 weeks ago said, you know, I'm 26 years old. I really don't appreciate a 50-year-old coming on to me at a bar. That's my father.
Well, that was one of my first experiences going to the bars when I came out at age 32, is that it was like the older the gay guy, the more hands-on he was.
Yep.
It was like the older you got, the less inhibitions you had. And I'm just like, are you serious? You just touched me.
Right. Could you stand back another foot, please? You're in my personal bubble.
Why do you think that's okay, that some of the older guys do
that? Well, I've been told that it may be generational, too.
Mm-hmm.
From the standpoint in the 60s, it was kind of a sexual revolution. It was almost like, you're telling us we can't, so we're going to tell you that we can. And so some of that also could be generational.
Kind of a pushback.
Exactly. Whereas now that homosexuality and lesbianism and transsexuals are more commonly out, meaning that we are seeing them more in society, then it's like we're kind of normalizing. Like they're talking about a lot of the gay organizations, the younger crowd doesn't see the relevance.
Right.
Because the younger crowd feels that they're part of society as a whole.
Exactly.
So there may be a whole even sexual revolution of its own coming up from the bottom up, in the sense that they're not bred the same way that the older crowd.
Well, we've spoken with numerous interviews over the years, and basically they're saying that, you know, we're one generation away from, you know, not having questions about gay, lesbian, mm-hmm. bisexual, transgender, all the other taboos mm-hmm. that society has placed upon our community mm-hmm. will be gone.
Right.
Because the next generation just is ho-hum. I always tell the story about when I came out to my sister. She was very upset, and I was talking to her on the phone, and she told me this story later, and she said, I hung up, and my 9-year-old niece said, what's wrong? And says, well, my brother's becoming a woman. And she said, oh, and turned around and started watching TV again.
And that was it.
And that was it.
Right.
For her, that's all it was.
Right. Well, and my nephew recently, you know, told me about in high school being hit on. And my nephew was a cheerleader, and he was a class officer, and he was on the baseball team. I mean, he was, you know, cute little hot young kid and very heterosexual. And he went to the same high school I went to. And it was just fascinating. I think 20 years later, here's this kid talking about what it's like. And he's, and I said, what'd you do? And he said, well, I just said thanks, but, you know, it's not my thing.
What would have happened 20 years ago?
And they would have beaten the hell out of him. Probably every day until he went to a different school.
Absolutely.
You know, and so, and part of that is a testimonial to my sweet nephew who's, you know, groomsman in our wedding. I mean, he's pretty fabulous. But, you know, the kids are just like, oh, because it is a compliment when somebody finds you attractive. You know, whether
it's
they're
not, not
just
an
say thank you.
Yeah,
it's not necessarily an invitation.
Not an invitation to go to bed.
Right. And, you know, I just think about the total change. If you had told me 20 years ago that there would be, you know, over half a dozen gay straight alliances in Houston public high schools, I would have told you you're from Mars. And yet, that's the case. It's really happening. And the coolest thing, I think, as I talk to teacher friends, because I used to teach in high school, and as I talk to them, and the vast majority of the members of those groups are straight.
It's an alliance.
Right. They're there to support their friends, and so two of them go with their straight, you know, friend. Or, you know, it's, I mean, it's just really, really amazing the transformation that we're experiencing in our society. But I think it's so important that we continue to provide venues. And, you know, now, for the first time, you know, in generations, now in Houston, I can sit and have a 30-minute conversation about the faith communities in Houston where you can go and meet people and socialize with people, because we have all these wonderful, welcoming and affirming churches, you know, whether they're Christian churches or Jewish synagogues or Unitarian Universalists. But there are lots. I just, you know, I have a column in the Gym, I don't know if you saw that, a couple of weeks ago, talking about the welcoming and affirming faith traditions. And that's not a conversation you would have had in Houston when I was a kid about what churches you could go to.
Well, we've been talking to Rex Humphries and Burton Bagby Groves about coming out. And, Burton, I want to give you an opportunity to let our listeners know how they can attend the coming out group and more information about the community center.
Well, any information about the community center, the best venue, we're on the web at HoustonGLBTCommunityCenter.org or on Facebook. There are all kinds of contact information for the different programs we have. We have a fantastic weekly HIV support group that is just exploding on Thursday nights every week. That's just fantastic, and partnering with Gilead Sciences and with Walgreens and lots of folks on that, and really excited about how that's going. But the coming out group is the first and third Monday at 7 p.m. If somebody has a question, they can email me through the website. It says email the facilitator. But we'd love to have you come. There are lots of activities. Jennifer, Renee, and Brian have enjoyed coming to First Saturday Queer Bingo.
Queer Bingo!
So there are lots of opportunities to socialize.
Absolutely. And that's the essence of community, I would say.
Right, it is.
Of coming out and doing different things and kind of having taking a slice of the community, whatever serving that you want.
That's right. Amen, brother.
Well, no, those are fun events to go to. The Queer Bingo, I always make a big deal out of it. But it's
better to win at Queer Bingo.
It's always better to win.
And Jennifer knows about that.
Yes, I do. Yes. The main thing is, though, is that you see friends in an environment that's just casual, and you can sit and talk.
And
play
it's friendly.
The game.
I don't call the numbers too fast, I hope.
Yes. Well, most of the time. But that's only because I wasn't paying attention.
Because you were socializing.
I was socializing. But the community center does a great job.
Thanks.
And really appreciate what you do.
Tim Brookover, the president, is just stellar. I mean, this is his second go-round as president. He was president several years ago before I was. And he's just amazing, the leadership that he continues to provide.
Well, Rex and Burton, is there anything else that you want to let our listeners know about coming out or anything in our community?
Just reach out. Don't be afraid to say hi to the person that you walk into or that you see at the store, because I think we're all out there searching for community, for relationships, and authenticity.
Absolutely.
I think that's the key, is opening yourself up to other people. You know, it's like the line from Big Eden where the grandfather tells the grandson, why can't you see that there's so many people that just want to pour love on top of you? There's so many people that just want to be our friends if we'll open ourselves up to that.
Let's all be friends. And you have been listening to Queer Voices. Thank you.
Hello, I am Herman Carlton Williams, candidate for the KPFT local station board. I am a native Houstonian and a veteran of both the United States Army and the United States Air Force. Houston is a very diverse city, and I urge everybody to become members of KPFT. Together we can advance Pacifica's mission to promote peace, justice, through communication between all races and nationality. Can you imagine what would happen if the Cuban Missile Crisis had occurred in the past few days with a president that more interested in what Fox News thinks of him than anything else? Thank God we had Kennedy as president of the United States and Khrushchev as head of Russia, and the Cuban Missile Crisis ended in a quid pro quo. We need to join together to put pressure on these people to use their heads and not cave in to mass media. Again, I'm Herman Williams, candidate for the local station board, and I urge you to support me. Thank you very much.
This candidate statement is property of the author only and not KPFT or Pacifica. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Hi, I'm Dave Salerno. Our world is in crisis while Houston is being assaulted by far-right radio. KPFT's revenue is down. We're also in crisis. I'm a candidate for our local board to help us survive this crisis. We need better news programming to see the distortions hidden by the other media. KPFT needs reorganization to fight back more aggressively with programs accurately exposing corruption. We are chartered as an educational station. We're the only station in Mid-America with a fully independent news and human rights emphasis. When you vote for me, for Dave Salerno, you are voting to aggressively counterbalance the far-right media with its enemy. Its enemy is accurate news programming. Help save KPFT, the human rights station. Please vote. I'm Dave Salerno.
This candidate statement is property of the author only and not KPFT or Pacifica. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Walensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
And we're back, and this is Jennifer Renee again, and we're here in the studio. We have Christina Martinez, who's CEO of the Rainbow Pages Foundation, and the founder of it, too. I mean, I've got to throw that in there. You know, we'll give you the titles, but, you know, give you the background study on there. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome. Well, let's see. The foundation, when was it first started?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me here.
Oh, you're welcome.
Second of all, the foundation was conceived in 2008.
Okay.
And it was out of a need to help more GLBT youth be able to afford and attend college. In 2009, we managed to give a total of 15,000 in scholarships.
Terrific.
But I have been approached about possibly helping the youth 18 and above, because I have been told that when they are in a facility that cares for them, whether they're throwaway youth or runaway youth, when they turn 18, they are released out into the street.
That's right.
They no longer get any help from the state or nothing. And so the goal of the Rainbow Pages Foundation is to build a center where we can provide emergency shelter and eventually provide some type of subsidized living arrangements for people that are still going to school, college, help them obtain their GED, and move them up from there, teach them a skill or some type of vocational training.
That's vitally important, because a lot of the kids who come out on the streets, who get thrown away, their parents, they come out to their parents and they're said, you're out, throw them out of your house, and then they have no place to go. And if they do find a place at 18, most of these areas don't. There aren't shelters that take them.
I was one of those kids thrown out very young.
Really?
Very young. Logo TV had done a story about that, and I was one of the people selected to have the story done. And so I know exactly what they go through, and that's one of the things that has mobilized me to want to create this. of course, I have been given a lot by the Houston GLBT community through my directory and my own business, and it's my turn to give back to this community. I want to be able to cover the entire range. I mean, if you were to ask me what does it look like, the complete picture, then I would tell you we have services for the gay youth, where we will have emergency shelter and, like I said, some subsidized living. And we will also have some type of a computer training and assistance. I am working, actually, on a staffing agency also that will, whose primary goal will be to place GLBT people in companies or corporations that offer same-sex benefits. And then on the other end of the spectrum, I want to work with our GLBT elders. And I'm also working on a program to have some daytime activities and eventually some, perhaps not necessarily nothing like a nursing home, but some assisted living for our GLBT elders.
Oh, that's a wonderful idea because, you know, the graying of our community in a time not in the distant past, when you became older in our community, you were just lost. And many of the retirement communities don't accept gay or lesbians, especially and trans, into there. You're just not wanted. You may have come out of the closet, lived your life out as who you are, and then in your retirement or golden years, you have to go back in the closet to keep a roof over your head.
And, you know, I am not trying to duplicate what it's already been done. I'm aware that in New Mexico you have a facility, you know, Rainbow Vision, I believe it's called.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the expense of it. I want to be able to provide somewhere safe, reasonable, subsidized for our elders, where they're safe, secure, have activities and other things to do. So that is our goal, and we have started taking a more active role. We still plan to give scholarships for our gay youth, but we want to focus the money now in raising it so that we can buy the property, remodel it, build it, and start offering these services. Mm-hmm. We did a fundraiser yesterday at South Beach. Charles was very nice to let us have it there. And everything was donated. The food was donated. A lot of artwork was donated by a lot of artists. One of our pieces sold for $1,500 during the live auction that Coffee did. We had entertainment by Nina Lombardo, Ty Blue. It was fantastic and a success. I don't have the final numbers, but on a low ball, we managed to raise about $4,000 or $5,000 in just 2-3 hours and for the amount of people that we had there.
About $4,000 or $5,000? That's great. That really is. And as far as the foundation is concerned and where you are on that, how would if someone's listening to us now and they say, you know, man, I want to support that, how would they get in touch with you?
Well, they can always go to our website. It's okay. rainbowpagesfoundation.org. And there we do have a button that you can click to give. We also have, of course, Rainbow Pages Foundation on Facebook. And we've just connected a button where you can donate directly to that. You can email us through that. We also have a monthly newsletter that we keep everybody appraised of where we are with our finances, with our money raising. We have applied for a couple of grants, and we've got promising. It's looking like one of the grants is a challenge grant. And so I'm excited about that one. I love that. You know, if we raise $20,000, the intern will give us $20,000. And so I'm excited, you know.
Now, we've been talking about the foundation, but the Rainbow Pages, that's the anchor to what started it all. Tell us a little about that, if people that may or may not know about it. And if they don't know about it, shame on them.
Well, actually, there's a lot of people that do not know, you know.
Let's take this opportunity to let them know before we go back to the foundation.
They think I'm one-dimensional, basically. But the corporation is Matt Click, and it's just a combination of our names and last names.
Right.
Because I do have a business partner who's Yolanda Lonnie Davis, and I'll emphasize the word business partner, because
right.
A lot of people think we are together.
When you talk in our community, when you say partner, there's a whole different
right.
definition.
And I mean business partner only.
Business. Okay,
she's my best friend. She's my best friend. She's like a brother to me.
Okay, got it.
And the corporation itself owns several businesses. Amongst them, of course, is the Gay and Lesbian Rainbow Pages, which right. is the one that is known within the community in Texas, Oklahoma, Phoenix, wherever we publish at.
Yes.
We also
want to thank your support of the Unity Banquet in the last few years.
I love it.
I want to publicly apologize when I messed up 1 year. I MC that. And so I messed up. So I apologize publicly.
It happens. It happens.
I've been waiting for this opportunity.
And, you know, I'm a proud member of STAG. I'll say it.
There you go.
But the corporation also has a rainbow graphic design firm, which is a design firm that specializes in creating artwork, billboards, everything with the gay and lesbian consumer in mind. So companies come to us saying, look, I want to target the gay and lesbian consumer. Can you help us create an ad that will appeal to them? Can you help us create a web page? And so we do that. We also have a marketing company, which whole purpose is to bring businesses to the gay and lesbian community. And, of course, we're working on SYNC, which is the employment agency I was telling you about.
What's it called? Or what's
SYNC, S-Y-N-C. It's just our initials once again. I don't be your
We're all about initials. You
not
know.
Creative SYNC.
We create the name so it'll have a nice initial group.
Well,
of initials.
Actually, my CEO, Solange Legacy, was the one that came up with that name. And so S for Solange, Y for Yolanda, my business partner, and the N for End, and C for Christina. And so that was the best thing I could think of.
Well, now, to communicate with the rainbow pages, the gay and lesbian rainbow pages, not trans, I know you left that out, but it's okay. I forgive you.
I figure I cover everybody right there. See, I said I was a member of
you
STAG.
You support the trans community,
and
so
I'm
it's okay.
And I'm a member of STAG.
But how do they get in touch if they want to advertise?
Rainbow pages? Well, they can just either call us, and I'll give you the number.
Okay,
281-997-9778. Mm-hmm. They can also visit our website, rainbowpages.net.
Okay.
Or they can email me directly at Christina@rainbowpages.net. And for those who don't know me, Christina is with no H.
That's right. It isn't. I didn't even think about that.
People try to put an H in my name all the time.
Well,
to the point that I created another email with a CH.
Well, they try to put another two N's in Jennifer. So,
no, okay,
you
yeah.
know, in my Jennifer. Anyway, let's go back to the foundation. Some of the other aspects of the foundation. You just had a fundraiser, which was very successful. How do you have several fundraisers during the year or just
well,
one?
Well, yeah, I do have a grant writer.
Okay.
And we are looking at the grants, and we are partnering up, working to partner up, not just in Houston, but in other cities where I publish. But Houston will be the first one in where I do this, because I want the foundation to serve all the cities where we publish a directory. So this is a way for me to give back to them. And mm-hmm. so since I publish in all of these cities, I'm eventually going to try to do, in each city, create a center for the gay youth, for our adult GOBT, and then for our elders also.
Well, that's great. Now, what other cities are the gay and lesbian Yellow Pages in?
In Texas, I have Houston, Dallas, Austin, San Antonio. I have Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, of course, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Phoenix, Arizona, Denver, Colorado. Just started Fort Lauderdale in Miami. And I am working on doing one in New York, growing and expanding.
You're a media mogul.
No, I'm not. It's a lot of work, but I'm glad to do it. I think it's a thrill for me to see the community use the directory. It's more of a thrill when my advertisers tell me, I cannot believe how fast I got a response. I'm like, trust me, it doesn't work like that for everybody, but I'm glad when it does.
You know?
I don't have a 100% success ratio, because there's always one or two that did not get the response or whatever, but I would like to tell you that I have about an 85% ratio with my directories renewal-wise.
Well, that's I have one on my desk, and when I have a...
Thank you very much.
A need, I always go there first. I would rather spend my dollars in the community.
I agree 100%.
Because it's just good to support our own community where we can.
And I am glad to welcome KPFT to our directory, too. They have a group
yes,
in there.
And you have an ad for Queer Voices in there, too.
Yes, I do.
Yes, thank you. All right. Now, when's your next fundraiser? You just had one. Do you have...
We're having one. I am working with Betts Gallery.
Okay.
An awesome gallery. And Randall, who's also one of the artists, Randall Job at Betts Gallery, I'm working with him to have another art fundraiser in 2 months. at Betts Gallery.
Okay.
Yes.
And so you people can come in and bid on the artwork.
By all the artists, yes, correct. One of the artwork that we had at South Beach was by the same artist. I'm sure you know Jeremy Lane.
Yes.
Okay. And it was a beautiful cat that we had there. We weren't expecting it, but I think it went for $250 or something like that. So we weren't expecting it. He's with the organization BFLAG,
right.
But he's changing the name now to VIP, which is visually impaired person.
Oh, okay.
And I'm working with them and supporting them, and I've agreed to let the foundation become their fiscal sponsor while they grow and help them grow. So
good. Well, yeah, we've had him on here before, and to
for
talk
the last
about
2 years, yes. we paid for their parade entry and all of that. So
oh, that's wonderful. That's
I'm excited,
is. That
you know?
Really is. Now, when you were talking about the agency and this, do you have a time frame on when this is going
to
happen?
We are looking to December 2011 to have an actual property. Right now, we are working with HUD.
Mm-hmm.
The opportunity has presented itself for a small complex of 10 townhomes. But I am not so sure that that's the way to go when it involves our youth. So because I'm working on getting social workers together. In order for me to open this, I have to have more than just the actual property. Ahead of time, I have to prepare to have the staff and the money to support the staff and to get it started.
Right.
So the goal is December 2011. Hopefully, if I can accomplish it sooner, I will. Believe you me, besides the fundraisers, we've put in some money ourselves from our own business and corporation, mm-hmm. of course. It's only right that I show first the intention by donating myself, you know.
Correct.
And then asking others to help and contribute. I want you to know that I also want to have a transgender component to this. And down the line, I'm going to talk with Colt and all of that because it's very important to me.
Very much so.
Very much so.
Because that's... when you talk about shelters and the like, the trans youth especially end up on the streets, and the sad thing
and
is
suffer.
They end up being sex workers mm-hmm. simply because it's the only way they can
exactly.
make money to
exactly.
survive.
And I want to prevent that, you know. I was on the street very young, out of necessity, and was homeless for a long while. You know, a lot of people don't know this, but I know what it is to be homeless. There was a point in time, once I got on my feet, where in my early 20s, even though I had a car and a job, all of a sudden I found myself homeless again, living out of my car. So I know what we go through, and we need to have something where we can support each other and help each other.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
We as a gay community have to empower each other, have to support each other. And somebody has to have a way. I mean, ideas I have many, you know. At one point in time, through another organization, the Gay and Lesbian Latino organization, we started doing something akin to modest needs, where GLBT people would send us letters telling us what their needs were, emergency needs. But we obviously didn't think it through very well because it started to become abusive. It was the same people sending us letters
exactly.
for money every month, you know.
Okay.
So eventually I feel that the gay and lesbian community needs to have something, you know. That was my hope with the chamber, that the chamber would create something that would help
mm-hmm.
the gay and lesbian community financially, the gay and lesbian businesses
right.
somehow financially, you know. We didn't, our own members helping our own members financially and stuff like that. But... one person. I need to enlist.
You can only do so much. Well, give us your information again. Contact information for both the Gay and Lesbian Yellow Pages as well as
did
the fan.
Gay and Lesbian Yellow Pages again.
Yeah.
How about Gay and Lesbian Rainbow Pages?
Rainbow Pages. Did I do that? Did I say that again? I did that. That is what I had to apologize for at the very beginning.
Well, it happens all the time until you realize that that
Rainbow
is...
Rainbow Pages.
That is Yellow Pages, and this is a full color
glossy cover. Yeah, this is the Gay and Lesbian Rainbow Pages. How to get in touch there, as well as the foundation.
Okay, the phone number for the Gay and Lesbian... Rainbow Pages. It's 281-997-9778. I'm not going to let you forget it. And the website is rainbowpages.net. For the foundation, they can visit our website at rainbowpagesfoundation.org.
All right. Thank you. We've been talking
with
media mogul Christina Martinez.
And what's the name of my directory?
The Gay and Lesbian Rainbow Pages.
Perfect.
And this is Queer Voices.
falafel for two would cost under $10. Hey, times are tough, so they go Dutch. Well, he's looking at him, and so is he. And under the table he can feel his knee. Could this be a chance for a little romance? He walks him down 7th Avenue, but he's too shy to make the first move till he asks if he can give him a kiss. He says, sweetie, that's something that I wouldn't miss. I don't mind taking a chance on a little romance. So under the streetlight he's kissing his lips, wondering if it's the best place for this. Out the corner of his eye sees a couple cops. Maybe just for now we better stop. It's too much of a chance we're taking for romance. Romance in Brooklyn, catch it while you can. Tomorrow he's flying to Paris and Amsterdam. Romance in Brooklyn, captured only in song. He was just a passer through, but he made him feel that he belonged. Walking down the street, holding hands. Just for tonight, he feels like he's his man. And they're strolling arm in arm through Prospect Park, till they see suspicious characters in the dark. Oh, if only they could find a place to be alone. But he's staying with friends, and his boyfriend's home. So they kiss goodnight and bid adieu. Have to put a lid on what they've brewed, but it's still intact, it's still fresh and new. The mystery of me and the mystery of you. And there's still a chance for romance in Brooklyn.
Music provided to us by J.D. Doyle. That was Pistol Pete, the name of the song Romance in Brooklyn. It's from the album True Stories, released in 2009. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee. And we have in the studio now, we've got Daniel Williams. And Daniel is a board member of the Transgender Foundation?
Yes, Transgender Foundation of America, which runs the TG Center here in Houston.
Right. That's over on Pacific.
Yes, 604 Pacific.
And we're going to talk tonight about Equality Across America, and that's a grassroots rights organization.
It's a grassroots activist organization here in Houston that's dedicated to giving people a venue to interactivism. And we're sponsoring an event on Thursday, the 19th. It's going to be at Anecdote Bar up in the Heights. It's going to be a showing of a documentary called Screaming Queens.
So that sounds like an interesting title.
It is an interesting film. It's about a riot that took place in 1966, so that's 3 years before Stonewall, at Compton's Cafeteria in San Francisco. And I know, Jennifer, I know you're aware of it, but a lot of people aren't. What had happened, at the time, most gay bars did not allow transgender people to go to the bars. If someone showed up cross-dressed, or if someone who was trans-identified showed up in their gender presentation, they would be asked to leave because cross-dressing was illegal at that time.
Yeah.
And the cops would use it as an excuse to raid the bar.
Raid the bar, right. Like we'd had in Houston up until 30 years ago.
Well, and a little bit after that as well. What happened was there was a cafeteria that was in the Tenderloin district where most of the gay bars were that was really the only venue in the area where cross-dressers and transsexuals and other people in the trans spectrum could congregate and create community. One night in August, so we're coming up on the anniversary of it, actually, some of the patrons got a little rowdy, and the cafeteria called the cops to come in. And the cops, because they knew that no one would care what happened to a drag queen, or no one would care what happened to a crossdresser, started roughing up the patrons.
Right.
And this is not the first time this has happened. This was a regular occurrence. And finally, someone had enough and threw a cup of coffee in the face of one of the cops, and all hell broke loose.
Right.
That first night, there were several people arrested, and the cops dragged everyone off. The second night, the cafeteria said, we're not going to let transgender people back in. And the entire community rallied around them and formed a barricade around the cafeteria to prevent anyone else from going in. The cops showed up again. And once again, all hell broke loose. What's interesting about the Cops Cafeteria riot, again, this is 1966, so it's before Stonewall, but it created an environment where suddenly the city leaders and the police recognized that they needed to communicate with the trans community. And after the riot, there was an organization called the National Transsexual Housing Unit that was formed in cooperation with the city to start creating dialogue.
In San Francisco.
San Francisco. And this is 1966 again. What that created was the environment where someone like Harvey Milk could move in 1970 and actually run for political office. And if you don't have the Compton's Cafeteria Riot and everything that came out of the Compton's Cafeteria Riot, you don't have Harvey Milk.
Well, I always, and you know me well enough, because I get on my soapbox every so often when Stonewall, they talk about Stonewall, but it really began with the Compton's Cafeteria Riot in San Francisco. And at that time, San Francisco was never the same again.
Exactly.
It became the city that it is today.
Because of the Compton's Cafeteria Riot.
And accepting city because of what happened then in 1966.
So this documentary we're showing, Screaming Queens, and that's going to be an antidote this Thursday night, the 19th, from 8:30 to 10 p.m. At Antidote, that's 729. I'm not sure how to pronounce the street. It might be Studewood or might be Studewood.
Studewood.
Studewood. There we go. It will give a lot more information about that. Fascinating documentary, very entertaining. In addition, the Transgender Foundation of America has several artifacts from Compton's Cafeteria in our archives, and I actually brought something to show you.
Oh my gosh.
And I know this is radio, and you people at home cannot see.
Y'all can all go to
but what I brought was a spoon from the cafeteria, and on the edge of the spoon it says Gene Compton's.
Oh, here it is.
Mm-hmm. And we have several artifacts from the cafeteria, including
a piece of history.
Piece of history.
Oh, I
and
love it.
This artifact, as well as some others, we have a couple ashtrays, we have a matchbook, will be on display at the screening Thursday night at Antidote. And as well, they're on display at the Transgender Foundation of America, 604 Pacific. We are open to the public Monday through Friday from 1 to 5 p.m.
Which, is very interesting. No one's ever seen the archives and the history. Kristen just is mesmerizing when she starts talking about all the different artifacts. A true curator.
That's Kristen Williams, the executive director.
Right. And it is just absolutely wonderful. I was fascinated by it because some of the things she described to me were things I'd heard about, but I never saw some of the real actual artifacts from those periods. It was wonderful.
Exactly. So Thursday night, you can come learn about history, and you can also see history on display, thanks to our friends at the TFA.
Okay. Now, if we're talking about the activist group.
Mm-hmm.
How do you find out about it? Where do you meet? I'm somebody out there and they're listening and says, I want to get involved.
EAA meets every other Monday at HCC Central Campus. There's information online at
where?
EAATexas.org. You can also email EAAHouston@gmail.com to get more information.
And they meet at
HCC Central Campus.
That's just one down.
Mm-hmm. Just just south of downtown.
You'll love this. We're pointing at something. You know,
it's radio.
It's radio. You can't point. There is no map. There is no green screen or a map here. We have to tell them what do we...
Yes, HCC Central Campus, which is just south of downtown Houston. And again, those meetings are every other Monday night.
Okay. Just go to the website and find out about it.
Mm-hmm. And the next one, I believe, is this upcoming Monday.
Upcoming Monday.
At 7 p.m.
At 7 p.m. Okay. And I've never been, so I'm coming. What would I expect, you know, so I won't feel uncomfortable getting there?
We are a group of people who come from all walks of life. We have people who are over 50, we have college students, we have professionals, we have those of us who work in retail, come from a wide variety of political spectrums, and really what binds us together is the belief that we should all be fighting for equality. And so what we strive to do is find ways to allow everyday people to enter that fight. You don't have to have $1 million, you don't have to run for public office, you don't have to know everything there is about politics or activism, because we're all pulling our resources together to help each other. And we, as an organization, we've made a decision that we don't have a president, we don't have a board. Everybody participates in the decision-making process. If you show up, you help make decisions.
Wow, that's called direct democracy.
Exactly.
Son of a gun. Lost in history. Okay, so I can participate. And one of the things is that, because I know I always had an aversion to being an activist,
mm-hmm.
because that there was a connotation around being an activist that I wasn't comfortable with. I had to be out on the streets. I had to carry a placard. I had to do that to be an activist. But that's really not the case.
Well,
we can be an activist in smaller, simpler ways.
There are a number of ways of being an activist, and absolutely carrying a placard and being out on the street is an important part of that, and it's important that we be visible and that we not be quiet. But, for instance, this film showing Thursday night at Anecdote, we had a member who came forward and said, I really like for us to show films, and I have this documentary in mind. And someone else said, well, what about a venue? And another person said, well, I know someone at Anecdote, and maybe we can talk to them. And everybody pulled their resources together to create the event, and that's the heart of the organization.
As far as, now, there was something that they had like 1,300 at an event.
You might be talking about our state convention.
Yeah, the state convention.
Yes, that was a couple months ago in Austin, and we had activists from all over the state of Texas. We had El Paso, San Antonio, Dallas, Houston, Denton. I believe we actually had people from College Station and Midland and all of those places collecting together to put our heads together and come up with new ideas and new ways to approach activism.
And This gives us an opportunity, and if I've never been an activist and haven't really wanted it, but I want it, I can be a participant in it.
Absolutely. I would say that if you are not happy with the world you live in, but you're not sure how to change it, come to EAA.
Okay. Now, how do I get in touch with the EAA again?
You can email eaahouston@gmail.com or visit the website eaatexas.org.
Real quickly, since you're part of the Transgender Foundation of America, tell us a little bit about that organization.
The Transgender Foundation of America runs the TG Center here in Houston. We offer a wide variety of programs, including group meetings, social events. We have a transgender yoga and self-defense classes, because those are issues where if an individual is sensitive about their body, they may not be comfortable going to a yoga class with other people who don't understand the trans experience.
Oh, I understand that completely.
Well,
or going to the gym, even.
Or going to the gym, exactly, and which is one of the reasons we offer the self-defense class. We also have the largest modern archive of trans history in the world. Which is where I borrowed the spoon from, which includes both historical artifacts as well as books and other documents, and that's growing every day. We also regularly help trans people communicate with the services that are available in the city. We were speaking with an individual today who was assaulted at a shelter. Trans-identified woman and really didn't know. She went to a shelter to get help, and she was assaulted and didn't know, where do I go from here? If the places that are supposed to help me are dangerous, how do I take care of myself? And
right.
So we've been working with her to, A, address the issues at the shelter.
Right.
And, B, to make sure she gets the help she needs. And we run a food pantry, as well as we have a rapid rehousing program and are always looking for general house goods such as pots, pans, towels. Through the city, we're able, sometimes in, under the correct situations, we're able to get people into apartments. But what we found is we can get them into apartments, but apartments don't come with furniture, and they don't come with pots and pans, and they don't come with beds. And so we found that our clients were often sleeping on a pile of their own clothes because that's the only place they had to sleep.
Oh, goodness.
So we are starting to collect housewares as well. And, of course, monetary donations are always gratefully accepted.
And how do you contact the Transgender Foundation of America?
You can visit our website, which is tgcntr.org. I always have to write it down. That's tgcntr.org.
All right. Thank you. We've been talking with Daniel Williams, who is a board member of the Transgender Foundation of America, and we've been talking about equality across America. It's the opportunity for you, if you want to be an activist and active in the equality movement, can be part of that. And want to thank you for coming.
Thank you, and I hope we'll see everyone at the documentary showing on Thursday night.
All right, thank you, and this is Queer Voices.
In late-breaking news, it doesn't appear that many U.S. soldiers are genuinely worried about serving with open gays and lesbians. The Pentagon reported late this week that only about 1 in 4 service members has responded to the much-valued survey of its troops about repeal of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. With an August 15th deadline looming, a Defense Department spokesperson said that less than 104,000 surveys had been returned out of some 400,000 that were distributed. It asks, among other questions, how troops deployed in war zones would feel about bunking and showering with open gays and lesbians. About 67,000 comments have been posted by military members and spouses in an online inbox, which will stay open until August 30th, and the spokesperson said that 150,000 surveys will be sent to troops' family members later this month with a September 30th response deadline. The Pentagon is paying Westat, an independent contractor, at least $4.5 million to conduct the controversial survey.
A new This Way Out update has been posted on our website. For recent programming information and behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show, log on to www.thiswayout.org.
We'll meet a gay entertainer who travels with elephants after a shout-out to lesbian lions, gay gnus, and bi beetles.
It's Only Natural, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Zookeepers who have long observed homosexuality in caged animals believed that stressors such as confinement and unnatural living conditions and diet were at work. But when behaviorists began reporting the presence of homosexuality in animals in the wild, it was found to be not only common, but even more prevalent than in humans. Homosexuality has been observed in more than 1,500 animal species. Giraffes, penguins, beetles, parrots, whales, and dolphins engage in pair bonding that's as committed and long-lasting as with heterosexual pairs. Homosexuality has also been identified in 130 species of birds and bees. But this isn't just a recent phenomenon. Apparent homosexual behavior among hyenas was observed 2,300 years ago by the Greek philosopher Aristotle. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Dustin Richardson.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine brought to you by you. Your charitable donations keep this program on the air. We've produced some special CDs to say thank you to our supporters, featuring queer history, reviews of LGBT music, and behind-the-scenes looks at relevant movies and TV shows. You can also now get CDs of our regular program by subscription and be sure you never miss a week of This Way Out. For all the details, please visit our website at thiswayout.org. Again, to find out more, please do log on to thiswayout.org, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA.
This Way Out Entertainment reporter Steve Pride wants you to know that while he's worked with gay professionals and he has dated a few clowns, it was really exciting to chat with someone who's gay, professional, and a clown, all at the same time.
Be a clown, be a clown, all the world loves a clown.
With your rent in arrears.
Why be a major poet and you'll owe it for years?
When crowds will pay to giggle if you wiggle your ears. Be a clown, be a clown, be a clown.
Hi, my name is Billy Murray, and I'm here with Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey.
Where are they?
They're right behind me, you just can't see them.
I don't know how we got that elephant in here, and it really stinks.
Me neither. It is a little stinky, a little furry, too.
How is that to travel with the elephants?
It's pretty amazing, you know? Not very many people have an opportunity to travel the world with 11 huge elephants. There's over 100,000 pounds of pachyderm that travel with us from city to city across the U.S.
Take me back to the beginning. When did you know?
When did I know what?
That you were...
Don't be shy.
A clown.
A clown?
Well, no, let's start by, when did you know you were gay?
When did I know I was gay? Well, growing up, when I did, I was much more lucky than folks years ago, you know, when they didn't have the internet and they couldn't check things out on private, you know, they had to go out in public and they had to experiment with their sexuality different ways. I had the internet, so that's really how I discovered myself. I'm not ashamed of it. You know, I found pictures online and that's really how I discovered that I was into dudes.
The bright side of that usually is at least you're going to be fashion forward, but when did you know instead you wanted to wear a rubber nose and big floppy shoes?
I always knew that I was different. You know, I grew up in New Jersey in a very, very small town. I was very conservative. I was raised Catholic.
Do they approve of clowns?
Yeah, I would say. You know, there's lots of clowns that are out there, you know, that clown for Jesus. I'm personally not one of those clowns. But my parents took me to the circus every year when it came around to New Jersey. We went to the Meadowlands right outside of New York City. It was always something I looked forward to. It took us about an hour to get there, and I would count from 1 to 60, 60 times all the way until I got to the circus. I was so excited to get there, and I would leave the circus, and for the next week, 2 weeks, I would be putting on circuses in the neighborhood with the kids, you know, making the jogs jump through hoops and stealing my mom's lipstick and putting it on as clown makeup. So I always knew that I wanted to be a clown. And then I went and graduated high school, and I struggled throughout high school being gay. Like I said, I came from a very conservative area, so it wasn't something that was really accepted. It wasn't something that I was completely open about. I did come out to my family when I was a freshman in high school, so if somebody asked me if I was gay, I wasn't shy about it, and I told them that I was. But I wasn't into wearing, you know, the pride shirts, and I wasn't out getting a pink triangle tattoo or anything like that. But after I graduated high school, I was still kind of in my shell. I wasn't completely comfortable with myself. I know that I wanted to be a clown, though. And so I went to clown school in New York City. I went to New York Goof's Clown School. And the guy that runs that was actually the director of Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Clown College. So I know that I was going to be getting the best clown education by going to that school. And going there really helped me accept myself, because so much of being a clown is wearing your insecurities on the surface and letting everybody see that. And just because you've got a red nose on and silly shoes doesn't mean that you can't have insecurities and you can't let people see you be vulnerable.
How do you use your particular insecurities?
I'm not afraid to dance. You know, I'm not afraid to be feminine. I'm not afraid to be masculine. And that's one of the best things about being a clown, is that you can be whoever you want, minute to minute. You don't have to be, you know, serious all the time. And the best thing about being a clown is that I can play all day. And I can play with people all day, and people can play with me, and I can make them laugh, and I can bring them joy, and they bring me joy by laughing and by smiling, and just by entertaining folks really gets me going every day.
But it's going to be hard, all that traveling.
It is tough. You know, we're in a city every single week, but I'm 24 years old, and this is the best time for me to do it. I've got a boyfriend in West Hollywood, so it is a little bit difficult traveling and being in a relationship, but he supports me now, and he's behind me as I'm out experiencing this. He's a little bit older than me, and he had the opportunity to go and travel, and now's my chance. So he really supports me in that. And I get to see the best of the best, and I get to see the worst of the worst in the country, just traveling everywhere. There are beautiful parts, and there's parts of this country that need a little bit of a makeover, but we'll get to it. But I'm really having a great time traveling around with the greatest show on earth. We live on the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey train. It's over a mile long, and 375 people live on the train with us.
How accepting are people in the circus of differing sexualities?
We've got performers from 6 different continents, and just because it's accepted here in America doesn't necessarily mean that it's completely accepted in the cultures that these people are from. So now that they're on my turf, they've got to realize and accept that this is the way that it is here in the States. And I help people in the show come to accept that homosexuality is totally fine, and I'm just as good a performer as you are, and there's no reason why just because I'm gay it should set me apart from anybody else. And I really love traveling with these people that they may not have necessarily been okay with it at first, and now we're good friends now. So I'm very, very lucky to be who I am and to be able to share my life and help people accept who I am.
I don't make it sound like you're the only gay person in the circus.
No, of course not. I mean, you'll find gays anywhere that there's people performing, whether it's backstage, whether it's on stage, or everywhere.
One of those tigers actually kind of set off my gaydar.
Oh, yeah? Was it the one with the pink nail polish?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I told him he probably shouldn't have that if he wants to be under the radar.
Oh, the kitty down low. Touring, are there any cities that you go, oh, God, we're going there next?
Do you know what? Yes, there are. But there are gays everywhere. Even in Alabama, when I think that, oh my goodness, I'm going to Alabama, I'm going to stick out like a sore thumb there, because I dress very colorfully. You know, I've got very colorful shoes and shirts and everything, so I always stick out when I'm walking around.
As a gay person or as a clown?
Not so much a clown. I mean,
look at that clown over there. Where's he from?
Sometimes I do dress a little bit goofy, and, you know, I might be dressing like a clown that day. But like I said, even if I may have not been looking forward to going to Alabama, I was really surprised at the gay community that they even had there, you know? You just got to look for it. You've got to look for that little rainbow, and the gays are there. So I'm not really scared to go to many states or any cities anymore, because I've been able to find it everywhere.
Now, Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey Circus is like the top of the top.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, it's the greatest show on earth. It is.
No, it is. I hadn't been to a circus since I was, like, in college.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, it was the kind of circus that would come to Orlando.
So that was just a couple years ago then, though.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Bless you. This is the greatest show on earth.
It is.
There are 12 clowns.
There are 12 clowns.
And Billy the Gay Clown.
Uh-huh.
You're the biggest gay clown in the world.
You think so?
But is Billy the Clown gay, or just Billy the person who plays the clown?
Oh, man. Well, I always slip in my personality, you know. Like I said, you know, being a clown is wearing your inside on the outside and letting everybody see it. So I would be lying to say that Billy the Clown isn't gay. I always do things that let my true self shine through. Like I said, I'm not embarrassed to be feminine. I'm not embarrassed to be masculine. And if you interpret that as gay, then that's what you can interpret that as. But it's not specifically gay. I don't necessarily do something to say, hey, this is where I'm going to show you that I'm the gay clown, because you're going to see it that way, but the person sitting next to you is going to interpret it a different way. So that's the magic of being a clown, is that you're going to find something that's funny that somebody else might not think is funny, and it's going to work for one person, it's not going to work for the other. So
what would be the biggest misconception about you?
Biggest misconception about me? Well, sometimes I'm a little bit shy when I don't know somebody. The biggest misconception about me is that I might not be that friendly, but I'm a clown, you know. How could I not be friendly? How could I not just be there and make you laugh and make you giggle? So outside of clown, sometimes I keep it a little bit more to myself, and that's probably a misconception about me, is that I'm not friendly, but absolutely not true. I'm super, super nice. So, don't be shy to say hi.
You drove here today.
I did, yeah.
Was it difficult to be in that little bitty car in L.A. traffic?
Well,
the clown car.
The clown car is really crazy. I mean, we fit 11 clowns into a Volkswagen Beetle. So it gets a little bit tight at times inside the clown car. With 11 of us in there, we all know what each other had for lunch. But, you know, the ride here to the studio today in the clown car wasn't too bad. They gave me a little bit of extra room because I had this super important interview.
And you're cute as a button, and this is radio. So if our listeners want to see what Billy Murray looks like and learn more about you, do you have a website?
They can go to billy-murray.com. You can also go to ringling.com. You can check out dates for our shows. They've got photos of me up there. They've got a little bit of a bio about me too. So definitely check out ringling.com. You can see all the dates of our performances in the area. And please come see me at the greatest show on earth.
Any final thoughts for our listeners?
Everybody's a clown. Even if you don't know it, even if you are not a professional clown, there's a clown in everybody. And I'll stand behind that for the rest of my life, because for you to make a joke, you're a clown. And so don't be shy. If you're looking to make a couple extra bucks and you want to put on a red nose and go twist some balloons at a birthday party, go for it. If it makes somebody happy, go be a clown. Find it inside of you.
This has been a conversation with Billy Murray, a gay clown from Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Circus.
The greatest show on earth.
It's a subtle slip in.
I'm good, right?
For This Way Out, I'm Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Follow your favorite international LGBT radio show on Twitter at TWO Radio. Read our blog at twopodcast.blogspot.com. And check out our fan page at facebook.com/thiswayoutradio. There are also links to all three at thiswayout.org.
Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, Rick Watts, John Torres, Sherry Lunn, Judd Proctor, and Brian Burns, with Dustin Richardson, Lucia Chappelle, and Steve Pride, contributed program material. Sweet Honey in the Rock, Judy Garland with Gene Kelly, and Vern Langdon performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is supported by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and by you. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to contribute to that support, listen to our podcasts, read the text of this week's news wrap, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. You can also find us on iTunes. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on KZYXNZ, Fort Bragg, Willits, Ukiah, California, 5PBA, Salisbury, South Australia, WORT, Madison, Wisconsin, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we're all going to stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT. So, Jennifer, what's happening in the community?
Well, there's a number of things. I always like to remind everyone of what's going on at the community center, because it's sort of it has worked hard to be part of the heart of our community down in the Montrose area. We mentioned earlier that on Mondays, on the first and third Monday at the center, at 7 p.m. is the coming out group. And as we discussed earlier, it has a terrific benefit for those people that, at whatever the age they are when they're coming out. And then on Tuesdays, they have the center has the Seniors and Friends potluck dinner at Bethel Church at 6:30. An ideal opportunity for you if you haven't had a chance to get out and you don't do the club scene, possibly you can go to that. Also, on Thursdays is the HIV support group. It starts at 6 p.m. And then on Saturday the 21st, there's the Volunteer League, and they're hosting a Recruit Me Drive party at the center from 7 to 10. And one of the things, I love theater, and I've mentioned it in the past, but I just really do enjoy it. Well, the Bayou City Concert Musicals has Gentlemen's Prefer Blondes. It's going to be between September 9th and the 12th. So get ready. It's only a little less than a month away. And spend some time in the theater. There's a lot going on. The GLBT Political Caucus has an open house of their new offices this week. You can find out by going to thecaucus.org and find out what their schedule is and find out other events. You can also volunteer with that organization. There's a number of many events that we found. One of the things, you can go to our website and or tweet Summer during the show and let us know and of the events that you have going on that you'd like us to mention on the air. I want to thank our guests tonight. The first one was Colonel Terrell Preston, retired U.S. Air Force. We talked about Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and he gave us a wonderful update of what's going on. And then I want to thank Rex Humphreys and Burton Bagby Gross. They were here, and we talked about coming out, which I mentioned at the community center, and we shared a number of our personal events. Then we had Christina Martinez from the Rainbow Pages Foundation. Want to thank her for coming, and a great organization. And then last but not least, we had Daniel Williams, and we discussed not only the Transgender Foundation of America, but Equality Across America. Want to thank all our guests for coming in and being with us this evening. I hope you enjoyed yourself. And of course, there we had This Way Out and News Wrap. And we'll see you next Monday. And this is Queer Voices. Good night. Take care.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, J.D. Doyle, Glenn Holt, Summer Iman, and Jack Belensky. For more information about tonight's program, including links to websites and organizations mentioned during the show, visit queervoices.org. And you can send email to jack@queervoices.org. Be sure to listen to KPFT every Sunday morning, starting at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston, a Pacifica Foundation station. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Renowned investigative reporter Eric Schlosser, author of Fast Food Nation, The Dark Side of the All-American Meal, will appear at the Progressive Forum Thursday, September 30th at the Wortham Center. Information and tickets are available at progressiveforumhouston.org. The event is produced in association with Urban Harvest. Eric Schlosser's Fast Food Nation helped start a revolution in the way Americans think about what they eat. Eric Schlosser also co-produced the Oscar-nominated documentary Food Incorporated, a fierce indictment of our industrialized food agriculture system and the consequences for our health, environment, and worker rights. Don't miss Eric Schlosser at the Wortham Center. Tickets and information are at progressiveforumhouston.org. That's progressiveforumhouston.org. This is Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston, Texas.
Hi, my name is Jamonica Phoenix. I was born in Galveston, but mostly raised in Nashville, Tennessee. I returned to Texas and have lived in Houston since late 1978. I'm a longtime listener, sponsor, and volunteer at KPFT. For me, it just seems like a good time to step up to be considered as a listener candidate for the local board, to do what I can do to further support KPFT and its diversity. I have a long history of working in service-oriented areas and volunteering for various organizations. I have worked in the legal field for over 20 years. I have served on a couple of boards, my condo association, and the Houston Blues Society. My intentions would be to work with the local board to bring positive ideas to the table and initiate or assist in any other appropriate events, functions, fundraisers, or programs to support and bring about outreach and growth of the membership base in the community. Again, my name is Jamonica Phoenix, and I would appreciate your consideration and would be grateful for the